welcome one and all once again to Nerds on the Rocks episode 105. This week we're actually going to revisit a topic from almost 2 years ago, partially because we didn't really get to do it right the first time, and partially because there's a lot of new, actually seems to be being revisited this year as well, and that is of course Scott Pilgrim. But before we get started, we're going to introduce our panel. We have Anthony.
Hello.
And we have Wesley.
I'm prepared for the epic of epicness.
Nicholas is also supposed to join us. He's having problems with his connection, so he'll pop in and out at some point, I imagine. But yes, as we mentioned before, we did Scott Pilgrim. I want to say it was episode 8 of this podcast, so almost 2 years ago to this date now, actually, around the time when Scott Pilgrim vs. the World first came out, and it wasn't the greatest podcast we ever did. But it was what it was. But this year, we have the Scott Pilgrim comics coming out in colored form, actually starting today, Thursday, August 8th, or 9th, I should say. And actually, we had word this week that Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, the video game for Xbox Live, I don't know if this has been announced on PlayStation Network, will begin in an online patch that includes Wires. And also, finally, it also online multiplayer after 2 years. So, we'll be talking about that in the new colored version. But let's kick it off with, what is your experience or exposure to Scott Pilgrim?
Go on, Wesley. You can go ahead.
I'll go for it. My first experience with Scott Pilgrim was initially, one of my friends was talking about it with me, and I went, I'll go check this out. And then I really loved it, and then I kept collecting it and I totally just loved the graphic novel. Then I found out about the movie, and I went, oh, this is the best thing ever. Now the movie. And then just went to the video game and on. But yeah, my first was the graphic novel, and I just totally fell in love with the dang thing.
Okay. Anthony?
I hadn't read any of the comics before I saw the movie. I saw the movie first, and then pretty much as soon as the movie finished, I was like, okay, I need to check the rest of this out, because it's really good. So I, went out and bought the six books, and I even bought the soundtrack to the movie, because the soundtrack to the movie is just amazing. It's one of, the best soundtracks to a film in, the past few years, and And here's Nicholas.
And here's Nicholas.
Yay.
Sorry, there was stuff, and then things, and also nonsense.
Nick?
How did I get this guy? All right, so, before it came out, right before it, I was dating this girl who, had read them, and was like, oh, these are really good. So, she's like, you should read these. So, in the space of 3 hours, I read all 4 books.
Nice.
And then just got super into it. Read eagerly anticipated book 5, 6, and so forth. And was super into it. I saw a lot of I identified heavily with the Scott Pilgrim character, obviously for reasons. Just bass player, punk band, kind of shitless.
So, have you ever had to fight a bunch of evil exes yet?
It's not really a good thing.
Okay.
Not others. My own.
Okay. And as for me, I am...
I'm not
laughing. And movie being made. The movie. And,
And there he goes. Well, while we try to get him back on, I will say that I actually got into this series as I get into way too many things. Because I was visiting a video game forum, and people started posting images from the comic, which really does stand out. But I think what really drew my attention, I think it's the cover to issue to volume 3, where it's dressed up like the cover of Super Mario Bros. 3 with Scott and with Scott in the Tanuki tail.
Son of a bitch! Every fucking time I get into a nice little story, shit just goes away.
Oh, I don't have that cover. I have the pink one with the brunette on the cover. I don't have the Super Mario 3 one. Oh, I'm kind of a bit. Yeah, carry on.
Yeah, but yeah, I saw the cover and I was told that it's just filled with a ton of video game references and stuff like that. Mm. So of course I had to check it out, and it's a good read. And just I think I got in around the time Volume 5 came out, so I want to say that was sometime like the summer of 2009. And then you know, word of the movie came out and images from that started appearing online. So. It, you know, I was reading them and catching up and just kind of getting prepared for the movie, especially being that I think it was the role that was most suited for Michael Cera at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's how I got into Scott Pilgrim.
Because I remember, because you, like, you got in about, volume 5. I was around, I can't believe how close the early adopter I was, because it was between, the volume 1, 2, release that I kind of got into that, and...
Didn't Volume 6 only come out around the same time the movie did?
Yeah. A month before, maybe 2 months before, something like that.
Hmm.
So, I mean, I have to ask, for somebody who got in that early, how was the wait for you?
Oh, God. It was torture. It was torture. I was, waiting for the next volume. Then, wait for the next volume. Then you have to wait a little bit more.
Yeah.
Cause you wait for the next volume.
I mean, not to, this isn't a knock, but they're not exactly, they can be quick reads, can't they? So you wait, years for it, and then probably within an hour, you've read it, and then you've got to wait, a long time for the next one to come. It's not like...
that's any comic book, really.
Yeah, you get stuff like your Spider-Mans and your Batmans where you only have to wait another moment.
But I think what he's trying to say is that you don't get... Yeah, you pretty much wait a full year for kind of a full story and comic book.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
The first Scott Pilgrims were not... They weren't a month, or about every, two, 3 months about with Scott Pilgrim, the graphic novel series, I do believe. And then the last volume
took longer and longer as he went through.
Yeah. There's actually a story behind the final volume of it, because they were talking on Twitter about disappointing moments in Scott Pilgrim, disappointing moments in their careers, not Scott Pilgrim, but in their careers, and Brian E. O'Malley actually said that he didn't like his final volume of Scott Pilgrim, because he actually didn't like the ending, because it was just after he was doing work for the movie, and he went, wow, I really like this ending. Man, anything I do now will suck in comparison to this ending. But he managed to come up with something, but he was even he wasn't happy with the ending of Scott Pilgrim. So, in comparison to the movie.
I wouldn't trust him in that anyway, just because he's very, self-deprecating, and also very perfectionist-y as well. Perfectionistic. I actually like that we can get into the movie, I guess, a little bit later, but I like that the movie and the book have slightly different endings.
Slightly different endings.
Just slightly.
Slightly, and they're different, they're slightly different, similar, but yet for very certain, certain factors that work perfectly to the favors of either the comic or the movie.
And I like that they changed the ending. The original ending for the movie was obviously very different.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad they changed it. Because, I guess we could get into this argument about the book, too, that there were people who were saying he should have ended up with Nias. That, she loves him and she was perfect, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, but that would have betrayed the whole arc of the story.
Exactly.
It's supposed to be about Scott Pilgrim growing up and being responsible. And him going with the 18-year-old who loves him unconditionally and worships the ground he walks on would have been a terrible ending.
It would have been the easy way out of an ending, but instead the ending you got was the, well, no, now he's in a grown up, normal relationship, and that's why that's what he stares towards, like with problems.
It's not necessarily a happy ending either, which is why I like it so much. It's a very much like in the movie, the to be continued. I like that it's just kind of like, instead of being an ending, it's a new beginning for Scott and Ramona.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest, I wanted him to end up with Kim Pine because she's my favorite character in the book.
Same here, I love Kim. She's awesome. Kim?
But did you ever think there was a chance of that actually happening?
No.
Kim also did not really like Scott that much at the end.
The actress who plays Kim Pine is in The Newsroom now, and she's probably one of the best characters in The Newsroom at the minute.
Yeah, Allison.
She's really good in it.
Yeah, she's really.
I can't remember her name. It's like Alice. Yeah.
Allison Pill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, getting back to the movie and comic book comparison, I mean, one of the reasons they do have slightly different endings is that they were being developed kind of concurrently because the final volume came out a couple, maybe 2 or 3 months before the movie actually hit stands.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I assume. Because I think the movie also has an alternate ending where he ends up with knives, right? Or am I mistaken?
Yeah, that was what I was getting at earlier.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was like one of those things where they probably filmed both possible endings, and then they saw which one. I mean, it worked within what was in the book, but I also think it works better for the movie than him ending up with knives.
There was actually reshoots.
Was it?
Yeah, because they test screened a lot of it, and I know a lot of people who were at the test screenings were saying, yeah, he ends up with knives. And when they did the new movie, they said, oh, they did change it. And I remember reading something about they had gone back and done some reshoots to, tighten some things up or some change, little bits here and there. And I think that was one of them.
Yeah, I think that was another thing that and again, this is going back 2 years. I remember that was one of the things people said kind of worked against the box office is that the movie actually ended up being screened from February of that year.
Oh yeah, they did so much screenings and a lot of people got free release free passes to see it in advance. And cause I know because I got one of those. So
yeah, that's how I saw it as well.
I think that's a bullshit excuse.
It is, but...
The movie was not marketed, because, let's be honest, they do that with every movie. I saw Superman, 2 weeks early, in a packed screening, and, that still did, gangbusters. The movie was marketed poorly, and it did not... It was, maybe it's a little too weird for the public.
Yeah, I'll definitely give you that.
And I think it kind of had a niche appeal. I mean,
oh yeah, it's the definition of a cult movie almost.
Mm. Yeah, it speaks to a certain generation from its look and its feel and its references that just probably it could be a good movie, but I assume a lot of people just didn't take the risk on it because it's really hard to market it to a general public no matter what you had shown from that movie.
Mm-hmm.
I took a friend. It was. Interesting. I took a friend of mine to go see the movie with me, and she had never read the graphic novels. She just heard about the movie. She knew it had a lot of Nintendo influence and old video game influence, and she loved that stuff. And she saw the movie and just loved it. And she went, and I was like, yeah, it's just if you find the right appeal, that's what it works. It also didn't hurt that the movie came out the same weekend as The Expendables.
That hurt it a lot, I think.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of target market was the teenage boy, young adult male, and, tell them this weird movie that the ads really don't tell you really what it's about or how, what type of movie it is versus Arnold Schwarzenegger and some other dudes. And
stuff blowing up.
And, Jason Statham.
Stuff blowing up.
Fucking dudes. I mean, what?
Yeah, granted, they could have moved it, but was it that Scott put, no, Expendables moved up, right?
Yeah, Expendables was supposed to come the week after, and they pushed it up a week. And I remember seeing that and going, no!
Mm-hmm.
Like Vader or some shit.
So yeah, and that's why 2 years later we're getting the Expendables 2 and that Scott Pilgrim 2. I mean, granted, there's no reason to do a Scott Pilgrim 2.
There would be no Scott Pilgrim 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I should ask this because this is something that people have. Do you think the first, do you think the movie should have been split into two?
No.
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 It's actually, considering there's like basically six graphic novels in the film, it's actually really well paced, and it's not got like everything that's in the graphic novel, but it's got everything you need in the film.
Yeah.
And plus this splitting into two and making one thing into a trilogy thing, it's getting a little bit out of hand now, and it's just
seeing the main reason is
because studios want to make more money out of it. Like, I know we're talking about Scott Pilgrim, but Peter Jackson, two films out of The Hobbit, fair enough. Three, that's a bit, you know.
Three's pushing it, especially, and this is like, we're getting off topic a little bit, but it's pushing it because he's using, like, he was already using stuff from the appendices and, like, other writings to flesh out and, like, add connections to Lord of the Rings and side stories and so forth.
Yeah.
But he's going to have to invent stories out of nowhere for this now, based upon, like, one line in Tolkien or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know how much I'm excited for it still, but I'm still kind of leery just because I'm a Tolkien. But anyway, yeah, there was not enough story in Scott Pilgrim to justify three movies.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Even
well, I didn't say
it would have just been including stuff for fan service.
Okay, yeah, that was the discussion, is that people said that you could have done, like, maybe the first three or so Evil X's and then kind of done the second one with the back half of that, but
the way the X's were set up were like video game bosses, and it worked perfectly. It was like, okay, build up for the Evil X, okay, boss battle, go, next, and so on, and so on, and so on, and he paced it perfectly, like, different levels, like, there you go.
And it actually, the running time as well, it comes in under 2 hours, and it's got all the six volumes in there. And I think that's partly down to Edgar Wright's talent as a filmmaker as well, managing to get all the beats he needs, because he's like, to get everything right. Because I know, most of the people I know who've seen it, like, really love the film, but one person, I do have a friend who thought the bits between the fights were, he thinks he found them quite boring. And then he wasn't that keen on the fights either, which is like,
So it probably wouldn't have been the wise idea to expand it with his actual training montage and stuff for that person. It's a fun movie. It's good. It was actually a pretty decent year for comic book movies with that and Kick-Ass. And what else came out that year?
Yeah, it was 2010. There was something else as well. It's fucking
Iron Man 2?
That was alright.
I didn't say it was good, I'm just trying to think about that year.
DC not have anything out that year?
I don't think they did, actually.
No, they don't. I mean, they've really had. I mean, they probably had Jonah Hex out. I don't know if that was that year.
Oh, no.
We don't talk about that. I haven't seen that movie.
I still haven't seen Jonah Hex.
I haven't either. I mean. Oh, I'm sure I'll get to it eventually. But yes, I mean, just quickly, and then we'll talk about it as a mishmash and this stuff coming up. Have any of you actually played the Scott Pilgrim vs. the World game?
I have.
I played it. I downloaded the demo, and I played it, and it was fucking hard, man. It's fucking
hard. It is unrelenting. This is an old school 80s, 90s beat 'em up at its finest, and it does not back.
It's really good. It kind of, like, the difficulty of it reminded me a bit of Maximum Carnage, actually, because Maximum Carnage is just really hard as well. And if you die, you just gotta go straight back to the beginning. Oh.
Yeah, but I think they're kind enough, because you are able to upgrade your character as you go through this
mission. Yeah.
Stuff, which makes it easier for you, and it does support up to 4 players co-op, so... I mean, if you got friends together to play it, which was my biggest hurdle, which is one of the things we'll talk about in just a second with the game, is that I'm a huge fan of beat-em-ups. I mean, Turtles in Time is one of my favorite games, Streets of Rage, Fatal Fury, and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm a huge fan of beat-em-ups, and it's not a genre that's actually done often anymore because they are kind of seen as shallow games.
But they're fun!
They're fun, but I think the thing is, and I can kind of see the point, is that a lot of people won't pay $60 for a game where you go from point A to point B and just beating stuff up. Granted, if you do it stylized, like Devil May Cry or something, people will, but the general idea is like an actual 3D beat-em-up won't, a pure beat-em-up won't work that well. I was excited. I mean, Scott Pilgrim is a license that I knew. It had four players. It was a brand new beat 'em up. It kind of harkened back to the 16-bit days. And I want to emphasize 16-bit because it drove me nuts when people said it's like an 8-bit game.
No, it's 16-bit adult.
If you show me the Nintendo game like that, I will eat a hat. But
I'm going to go find one now because I want photographic evidence of this hat eating.
you won't find it. You might find stuff that comes somewhat close, but no.
You might find stuff that was during the NES era, like arcade games, perhaps, and probably like stuff that was cross-ported on the NES.
Actually,
or the Genesis, but for the most part, like, if you look at something like River City Ransom, or even like Turtles 2, or Turtles 1, the arcade game, they don't look anything close to Scott Pilgrim.
The closest game that you might could say remotely comes close is maybe Mighty Final Fight. And that's really about it, if you're going to even come remotely close to the look of the Scott Pilgrim game. But not the fluidity, but the look of that style is Mighty Final Fight. Have either of you guys played it?
No.
It's a very similar style to that. Like, very, like over, like, super deformed head. It's fun.
Yeah, and looking at screenshots on Google, it does look, I mean, not, it doesn't, I mean, the character models don't compare in the background.
Not at all, but similar.
Based on River City Ransom?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Anthony's trying to find it, because we're trying to explain the difference between why Scott Pilgrim doesn't look like an 8-bit game. But yeah, I've played the game a couple of times with friends, and we've kind of gotten like to the second or third stage.
It's brutal.
That and there's like some funkadelic hidden stages.
Yeah.
And there's like some trippy backgrounds and stuff. And if you clear it, I forget what happens. It's been a while. Like I said, it's been 2 years. But one of the biggest hurdles, I think I actually have this game on the PS3 as well. But one of the biggest hurdles that happens is that you can't play online. And I mean, in this day and age, there are some, you know, like, there are games that can kind of get away with it or whatever, but for the most part, if you don't have online and like a four-player co-op beat-em-up, then you kind of lost part of your market. And it's taken some time, but they seem to finally remedy that problem with Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. It's getting a patch in next week, actually, that brings Wyatt Sweems into the game and adds online co-op all for $5.
Yeah, that's why they're making it. Instead of like making just a little patch, it'd be like, well, yeah, we're adding another character and other stuff. So yeah, the $5 DLC pops into play. So
yeah, the thing is, a lot of people are complaining, as gamers tend to do.
Wait, people complain? What's that?
Never.
But I mean, for once, I'm kind of on their side. it's just a traditional model right now that you don't. If you patch something like that, like a gameplay feature, it tends not to be something you pay for.
Yeah.
It's a really tough thing to call. I understand why, because it is 2 years later, and I assume people have to work on the net code and stuff like that, and they do deserve to get paid for their work, but, you know, it's like I said, it's more of a tradition, or at least it was. I mean, this generation has shown that people get charged for any part of the game. But
yep.
Usually if you add something like that, where it's not, like, it's not even something that's going to, it changes the game, of course, because it adds online play, but it doesn't change anything really underneath the hood. Like, it pretty much failing to, like, unlock the online feature of it. But I mean, they are dressing it up with a character, so I guess that's something. So, I mean, if you wanted to split it, it's like $250 for an online patch, which isn't a huge deal breaker. But it is still kind of something that, you know, because especially people who supported this game 2 years ago when it's like $10 or $15, and then you're like, oh, I have to add another $5 to get everything I wanted 2 years ago. We shall see, but I do plan on hopefully unlocking it and trying it out. Like I said, I'm a huge fan of beat 'em ups. One of my favorite games of this generation is actually Castle Crashers, which is like the evolution of the beat 'em up.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've never gotten to play that. I've heard it's really fun.
Yeah, it's a ton of fun, and it had online for free. So there's that. But that's not the only thing that's new. That's, I guess, old and new in the Scott Pilgrim world, like we mentioned before, is that the graphic novels are actually being re-released in color this time.
Mm-hmm. Hardcover and color, mind you.
And I think digitally, because I think, I believe if you
bought,
if you bought it at Comixology, you get it for $2.
It's $9.99.
Really? That's actually really good.
No, it's $9.99 for the combo version.
But if you're upgrading from the black and white version, it's for $2.
Oh, wow. That's actually pretty cool.
So, I assume it's only if you bought it on Comixology and not if you have the physical copy.
Yeah.
So, they are being remastered into, like, a new hardcover format. I think he might be tweaking them a little bit, like, changing some panels around with stuff that he that on the reread he's not been too happy with, you know, on the second time around. Hopefully nothing as drastic as, say, adding Hayden Christensen to the epilogue, but, you know.
He should do that. You realize that. He should just put Hayden Christensen in the scene going, oh, and I decided to add Hayden Christensen because he makes everything better.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of an interesting concept because I don't know of many, I mean, this is kind of, I guess if Anthony's what he says is true, it's kind of like a director's cut. And I don't know if that happened in comic books before. Like, I'm sure people have kind of gone back through and, like, they, you know, like DC has, like, the absolute editions, but those are usually, like, antinotes and whatever, where, like, they add a bunch of, like, you know, like, behind the scene, like, some rough sketches, some stories, some scripts, some outlines. But they don't go back and, like, you know what, it's added end into year one, so people are happy with that now.
Yeah.
Well, they reprint them into better formats, but I'm trying to think now of, like, a time when a creator is actually altered somewhat, but I can't think. But I think that might be down to, like, Marvel. That's not really something I could see Marvel and DC doing. Altering one of the...
I would say if it made them money, like, if they could find a way to, like, patch in Christian Bale in, like, the Long Halloween or something, and resell it, I could, you know, I could see that. I mean, comic book companies, and no company really is above making money at the expense of the consumer.
Mm-hmm. And if you can make money off of it, they will find a way.
Yeah. But I think part of it is because Scott Pilgrim is a creator-owned property, so he can go back and say, like, you know what, now I'm going to do it in color. And it's kind of one of those things. I'm kind of curious. I haven't really seen much reviews on it, but I'm kind of curious what people actually think.
Yeah.
Because I know, you know, like, in comics, you kind of get an idea of what you want. You know, you kind of get an idea of how you see things in your head because it's in black and white. So you start to, like, Scott has this certain color hair in your head. I mean, Scott's different because he's on the cover of the comics. But, like, some of the stuff, you know, like, they were kind of brought to that for the movie, but a lot of it was still kind of left up to your imagination.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you went back and filled in The Walking Dead with a bunch of colors, would it change the book for somebody?
Well, it changed the value of it.
Hey.
Welcome back.
I'm at home in Wi-Fi now. It should be fine.
Okay. We're talking about the recolored versions of Scott Pilgrim.
Tweaking them slightly. Because he's supposed to be altering a few panels a little bit in the hardcover editions.
Oh, really?
Well, that's what...
I was aware of that.
Yeah, that's
what was mentioned in the press release when they were first announced, so... Cool.
Yeah, I just got a hold of my copy of the new edition. I went, oh, I cannot wait to get this home when they, like, I just
take it home with you tonight.
I have it on Amazon.
Take it the best.
Take me home tonight. I don't want to go to the village.
I didn't think it was out today because I went in quite a few comic stores, different ones to where I usually go in, and even the Forbidden Planet in Manchester, which is huge, and they didn't have any copies in. I'm like, oh, so I just bought other stuff instead.
Well, it's funny, it came out, like, I do believe it came out this week, and
it
sold out instantly, like, oh, sold out. And I can't wait to see, I cannot wait to, when this gets sent to my house, I can sit down and read
it. Oh my
god.
Yeah, so it is kind of interesting. Like I said, it's really, I haven't seen any reviews on it or anybody really tweeting thoughts about it. So I'm kind of curious to see if much of it was changed, like Anthony says, and if so, what was changed?
Probably so small you might not even notice. So,
yeah, and maybe some stuff that's more in line with the movies.
Yeah. But although I was thinking earlier, with you mentioning him saying he wasn't too happy with the ending to Volume 6, if he's using this as an opportunity to maybe change that a bit, but guess what, we'll have to wait and see.
That will be interesting when they get to that point, what ultimately happens.
Did they announce the schedule for it?
I don't... I thought it was going to be like one a year or something, or one every 6 months.
I know there's actually another one due out, hang on.
October.
Yeah, there's another one due out in October. And
well, I'm pretty sure the 6 coloured volumes of Scott Pilgrim will be out before the 6 3D films of Star Wars, so.
Are those one a year?
Oh, that's, I think they are, yeah.
I actually forgot Phantom Menace came out in 3D this year.
You're not the only one.
Yeah, I mean,
that's right, I did.
I mean, it's probably because Phantom Menace isn't the greatest movie of all time.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? Because, like, you have to wait longer, like, to see, if you actually wanted to see Empire Strikes Back, you got to wait, what, like, 4 years to see it?
Yeah,
like,
oh my
no.
God. Worse. No.
Well,
fuck those movies.
Yeah, maybe.
Huh?
Maybe he'll upgrade the other two movies into something watchable now.
I really highly doubt it. I mean, I don't think Phantom Menace was that watchable, was it?
I don't know if it did it do well in 3D?
I have no idea.
It did. Okay, it actually didn't do too bad in 3D. Considering.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know people who went watching it, which kind of made me sad a bit. But people actually went out of the way to watch Phantom Menace in 3D.
Because, you know, Jar Jar Binks is the best character ever.
Well, kids love him. That's fine.
Yes, kids love Jar Jar.
I mean, what? No, they don't.
Yes, they do. They really do.
No one loves Jar Jar Binks. No one loves Jar Jar Binks.
I actually do know someone who loves Jar Jar Binks.
Well,
you don't. That person is an automaton. It's a robot created by Lucasfilm. A droid, if you will.
Well, I have to give Ahmed best credit when Jar Jar Binks comes up. When the robot chicken specials arrived, he did reprise the voice of Jar Jar Binks for the specials. I was very impressed by that. Like,
would you turn down money? I mean,
no, not at all.
Not like he's getting offers out the wazoo.
No.
And just because the characters hate it doesn't mean you should pass up a check. I wouldn't.
Voice of Jar Jar Binks for about a quick few hundred? Sure, couple thousand.
Well, I mean,
why not?
I guess since we're on characters, who is your favorite from Scott Pilgrim?
Kim Pine. No question. Kim Pine's best.
In the movie, it's definitely Wallace Wells. In the comic, I'm not too sure, actually. Mainly because in the movie, Wallace Wells has all the best one-liners.
Wallace is amazing.
Really
it's awesome. It's also awesome that he's what Macaulay Culkin's little brother.
Yeah, Kieran Culkin. Yeah.
One of the many Culkins that are out there. They're like the Wayanses. They just spawn everywhere.
I thought there's only three of them.
It is pretty awesome as well how Scott Pilgrim manages to defeat Captain America and Superman.
That's right!
In 2 hours.
Yeah,
well, to be fair, Box Office also defeated Superman several times.
So. It was quite
sick burn.
High five.
High five, sir.
And I guess technically speaking, you can also say the Human Torch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'd rather reference the better. Right?
He was actually, I enjoyed him in the Fantastic Four. It's not his fault the rest of the movie didn't live up to his portrayal.
Yeah.
Avengers, that's all.
I will say, like, my favorite characters is, it's definitely, it's actually very similar to Anthony. It's like, it's like Wallace in the movie, because damn, Kieran Culkin nailed freaking, just perfectly got the character of Wallace, and he delivered those lines with pitch perfect timing. It was absolute genius. And really, and then the comics, actually, Nicholas, I go with Kim Pine, because Kim Pine, it's like almost like Kim Pine in the movie, she did really cool, but in the comics, it's Kim Pine's time to shine a lot of the time, because she really was, because she...
They do get kind of rid of some of her back, well, most of her background in the comics. I mean,
yeah, I guess.
Ooh, go! I mean, go on.
But also, and Earl, who's your favorite character between the comics or movies?
I would go with Wallace in both, actually. He's an interesting mentor character, because he just kind of, like, most mentors are kind of uplifting and helpful. Oh. He just kind of picks on Scott.
Yeah. Not this one. Wallace is like, get your ass up. And also, of course, always remember this, Scott Pilgrim had one of the best, like, and Anthony, you touched on it, one of the best soundtracks of...
It did.
It had so such good. A killer soundtrack.
Yeah, when I was, like, watching the film, I was thinking, I really need to get the soundtrack to this film.
Same here.
Amazing. With, because it's a mix as well of, like, songs bands already have, and songs that Brian Lee O'Malley was listening to while he was writing the comic as well, I think, and then there's
including
new songs out there as well.
Including the song that he took the name Scott Pilgrim from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there's new stuff on there by Beck with the Sex Bob-omb songs. So.
Yeah, which are awesome. I love those songs. And have actually covered one. Okay. Robots and Race Cars covered Threshold. That show.
Cool. Nice. What was I going to say? Who is your favorite Evil X?
Oh.
Or Evil X battle, if you want to go with that.
I just blanked on his name. Todd
Ingram.
Yeah, Todd Ingram. He's my favorite. Such a douchebag, especially in the comics. He's a giant. Like, they made him more of just a regular asshole in the movies, because they cut out a lot of the, some of the implications of his actions.
Yeah.
But he's still a giant douchebag in the movie. But in the comic, he's even worse.
Nice.
He's such a douchebag.
Which number X was Todd?
Three.
Okay.
I think mine might actually be Lucas Lee, because Chris Evans does a really good performance of him, and I like the growl in his voice, and the in the films, or the clips of the films are in the films with the which Lucas Lee stars in. There's some really over the top action movies, and the fact that Scott manages to defeat him by tricking him into doing a skate move that he can't pull off.
Yeah, that's to say, basically, he tricks him into beating himself because of his ego.
Yeah.
That was an interesting one. I Todd Ingram in the movie. I also saw Brandon Roof's character in the whole Vegan Please, even though that kind of got annoying a little after the movie when everybody kept on quoting that or whatever.
Yes, but you have to admit, I guess actually Todd's my favorite too. That fight was ridiculous, and the vegan powers was the way it was represented in the movie was so insane, but it worked perfectly.
Yeah, I also like the fight with the twins.
That was good. Yeah,
that was an awesome. The film did a terrific job with most of the fights. I don't think there was any fight in the film that I was really disappointed with.
Not at all.
I don't remember which Evil X I liked in the books the most. It's been such a long time since I actually read them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll be rereading number one for the first time in ages. Once I get the color version again, I'll go. Okay.
Once I get all my possessions out of storage, I will be rereading them again. Which will be some point in the future. Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, is there anything else you want to talk about, touch on with Scott Pilgrim and Scott Pilgrim franchise?
I do want to mention this, and I think I've talked about, I'm not sure if I talked about it somewhere, but in the Japanese release of a Scott Pilgrim, it's the Scott Pilgrim versus the World movie. Since there's so many video game references, they got the guy who does Game Center CX or Retro Game Master here in the U.S. to Reno to do the commentary for the movie. So it's Edgar Wright and Reno having commentary over the Scott Pilgrim movie.
That's pretty cool. Awesome.
And it's really neat. And Reno's just commentating on all the retro influences in it. I really need to find like a translation of this commentary at some point, because that would actually be a lot of fun to just sit back and listen to.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of the comment. There's multiple commentaries on the movie, right?
Yeah, there's one with cast members.
Yeah, yeah.
And one with Wright, Brian Lee O'Malley, and Michael Bacall, who co-wrote it. They're both very, very interesting and fun to listen to.
And that's what's interesting about the movie is, it's always a shame that it didn't do as well in theaters, because you could tell the cast had so much fun making this movie, and the amount of time and the amount they put into this. Because I want to mention one of the soundtrack of the cover of Metric's Black Sheep in there.
God, I love that song so much.
I love that song. Oh, and I love her take on it, because it's not on the soundtrack though, which is really weird that the cover's not on the official soundtrack.
Wait, who covered Metro?
They didn't cover it. It was just the version with.
Did you mean
Brie Larson actually covered the song for the movie?
Yeah. Okay.
She covered the song for the movie, and
it's the actual music track from the real song, and it's like karaoke on the.
Yeah, it's karaoke on the, and she did a killer job with the. With that song. And when America, I hadn't heard the original Black Sheep, and I listened to it and I went, oh wow, okay, she really did a killer job with that. So yeah, that and that's just sort of like that icing on the cake of the amazing soundtrack of that very cool movie. And I also have I got the iTunes soundtrack that has all like the chip tunes from the video game too. So,
Since the commentary got mentioned, actually, just the Blu-ray itself has like tons of great special features on there. So, if anyone doesn't own it yet, they should definitely go out there and buy it, because it's a really good disc. Because especially now, because lately they seem to be getting a bit skimpy with the special features you get on Blu-rays, which is a little bit annoying. But Scott Pilgrim's just packed. Got stuff back from there.
And you can usually find it for like $10 nowadays anyhow.
Yeah.
So there's that. I wonder if they plan on re-releasing that too, because everything else is getting an upgrade this year with Scott.
Yeah, Universal have like re-released a lot of the line, haven't they? Because it's 100 years, and I actually think Scott Pilgrim is getting re-released in a tin along with Kick-Ass as part of the Universal anniversary. So
that would fit. That would actually strangely fit.
Although some of us already have Scott Pilgrim in tin because we bought it when it first came out, and it's a really nice shiny tin.
So. Well, some of us didn't have the option.
Oh yeah, that's true. Oh
yeah.
We actually don't get many tin releases over here.
Yeah.
Like they only started offering the Batman movies when The Dark Knight Rises was coming out in tin.
Yeah. They only just come out recently here too, but I didn't buy them because I'm waiting. I'm hoping they do like a really nice collector's edition trilogy set when Dark Knight Rises comes out later this year. Since I don't have Begins or Dark Knight on Blu-ray, I only have them on DVD. But I want the trilogy on Blu-ray now, so because I'm obsessed with that.
Yeah, I have the first two, so I'm like, it's the same thing with the Avengers set. Like I could have waited, but. I had to get it, and now I really want that Avengers set, but I can't really find any way to justify it when I own 5 of the 6 movies. Though, granted, I'm trying to justify the bond set when I own 13 out of 22, so... And that's a whole lot more money. But that's neither here nor there. So I think we're good to go, unless you folks have anything else to say. Okay. So join us next week, where we'll be talking about the 25th anniversary of Summer Slam. Kelly and I from Los Angeles. You can check us out on iTunes, Zoom, Twitter, Facebook. I'm assuming Google Plus, but I don't know if anybody actually uses that. For Nicholas, Anthony, Wesley, and myself, this has been Nerds on the Rocks, episode 105.
Yep.